The Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
Like we always do with this time, I go for mine, I get the shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky.
Hey! Welcome to the good life, baby. Welcome to the good life.
Well, it depends who you're talking to, but hello, everyone. Welcome.
We are living large up here in North Queensland.
We'll get to that soon. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. We'll go through round 13. Sorry, only a few games, obviously, because Origin's up at Townsville tomorrow. So we'll do a little bit of preview of that and just a couple of different news that have come out. So we may as well get straight into the games. And the first game was the Dragons annihilating the Broncos 52-24 and literally annihilating.
Literally. All you can do is just shake your head again at what Brisbane produce. Look, you know, first half, I guess, look, they started this game off, I thought, with a really good intent and, a really good sort of, not so much game plan, but they looked ready and up for this game. You know, it was a bit of a wet night at Kogra, and the ground was a bit slippery, the ball was a little bit slippery. Apparently it had rained there from like 3 o'clock onwards, and you could see throughout the game like it was just a constant drizzle pretty much throughout the game. But I thought Brisbane started the better of both teams with the first try, but St. George sort of answering straight back. But St. George, but boy, the Dragons made scoring points look very easy.
I was just gonna say,
you know what I mean, just slick in attack.
And for me, they did look slick in the attack, and we'll talk about one player soon who's not contracted there or going to be contracted there for next year. But just for the Broncos, their 1-17 is just, I'm assuming, Kevin, basically, if you looked at that 1-17 and even this week's side coming up, I mean, they're throwing Carmichael Hunt, of all people, in the number six. So
the saviour is the 34-year-old saviour is back.
2014. But if you look even on this side that they played, it's a mismatch. It's clearly just, bloodying young players. And they've basically, I think, given up this season.
I mean, I'm sure Kevy hasn't, Kevy Walters hasn't really given up on this season, like especially the way that he's sort of chopping and changing the side week after week, which I guess to me sort of says that he's sort of clutching at straws at the moment. Like he's just trying to work out the best combination with the talent that he's got there in Brisbane, but it's just not happening at the moment. So like how long is he going to keep tinkering with the side, especially in key positions like the halves? He's pretty much got, his number nine sorted. He knows that it's Jake Turpin. The number one, I guess, is a very contentious point at the moment because Jermaine Asako, with that absolutely monumental brain fart right at the end of the half by not either diving on the ball as they made a play pretty much off the scrum, and, him not making a play at the ball, trying to bat it dead. Time had basically expired. And he just gets caught ball watching, stands there, watches it. All of a sudden, Dufty slips through, and he's just caught. He's caught with his pants down. And you're just like, oh, my God. Like, that just took at 18-all, I think Brisbane would have been pretty happy going into halftime. Score-wise, 24-18, okay, fair enough. But just the deflating way that they would have gone into the change rooms at halftime, I think just took all the sting out of Brisbane.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it led from, like you said, Jermaine Asako's brain fart, who interestingly enough, has now moved to the bench, actually, for this week's game.
Well, so, he got the hook. He got the hook with 15 minutes to go.
Yeah, so he
pretty much the first set after the half, he comes out and he gets he bobbles the ball as he's trying to play the ball. Then later on, he bobbles the ball out of dummy half. It's just when he's having an off game, he is awful.
He's out of the whole 21-man squad altogether. Herbie Farnworth playing fullback of all
people. They've named Herbie Farnworth at five at fullback. I don't know how that's gonna go this coming week. I don't know. Like, that's just such a strange. That's once again. I think that's just Kevy clutching at straws. Like, what if you're not gonna bring, or you don't have a specialist there, you're bringing Carmichael Hunt into the side. Why not just put Hunt at fullback? And have somebody like Brody Croft and the partner Albert Kelly in the halves. It's bizarre. Like, Hunt is made for the fullback position.
I will say,
what does that say about Brody Croft?
Well, yeah, I mean, it says a lot about Brody Croft, but it says to me a lot about I just don't like him as a player. The Tyson Gamble, like, that game clearly showed that the game's run for them through Albert Kelly. You know, he got two line break assists. He got three try assists to Albert Kelly. When Tyson Gamble just got one try assist that whole game. Like, I'm just not his biggest fan, to be completely honest. And it shows he's not even in this side this week. So Kevy's just going to keep tinkering until he finds something.
Yeah, exactly.
On the other side, you look, the brilliance to me, and I still can't work it out, and we'll probably talk about it in a sec, of oh my God, I've already lost his name, and he hasn't even left the side yet. Matt Duffy. He was brilliant in this game. Absolutely brilliant.
He was having a field day.
I don't know how they can't find a spot for him in that starting 17. I mean, he'll keep playing for the rest of the year. I'm talking about next year. I don't get it.
Of course. Look, they've flapped on with it a little bit there on NRL 360 there last night, where and the way that they sort of described how he is to coach, like, that they thought that he's a little bit difficult to coach. Paul McGregor last year, before he got the arse, basically he was offside with a couple of players. One of them was Matt Duffy. They've sort of come out and said that he may have a problem with he's not the best defensive organiser.
Yeah.
And that's all well and good. But look at what he does in attack. Look at what he provides for you in attack.
They're
saying that it's a knock on his game that he may not be able to be coached and to process defensive setups that he's got to have. To me, that's just saying, oh, he can't take in information. Does that mean they just said he's dumb?
I don't think a tackling problem is the issue, because I mean, your fullback generally only get three or four tackles per game anyway.
His defensive setup, that's coachable. And it's like, oh my God, like, it just you just need
ex fullback to go there to just that talks, because that's all it is just talking to your front line.
And if you believe in him, then all we got to do is have a look at what he provides in attack. He's just such a live wire.
You got him
in the side, haven't you? You've got him there.
They tried the
experiment after he got hurt, that he hurt his shoulder at Magic Round, and they had a couple of weeks of Cody Ramsey at fullback, and that didn't work.
Yeah, no, I've always liked him as a player, so he'll continue to play at number one there for the rest of the year. I mean, the two glaring teams that stood out were obviously the Broncos, because they missed out on Nicho Hynes, and a team named the Canberra Raiders. But we'll talk about that. They were named before the certain players' indiscretions in Curtis Scott. So.
I'm not buying the Raiders. So I'm not buying that at all.
Well, I'm buying it if something happens to Curtis Scott. You know, I could see Nico Kostak move straight into the centres, and then Matt Duffy solves your problem. But, I mean, the Broncos need a number one as well. They need a number one.
No, that's right.
So, Great win by the Dragons. They're a team. I mean, I picked the Dragons, but you know, it's still hard to pick the Dragons, and I don't know why. I just find it hard to pick the Dragons. I picked them. I just don't get why. They're in the eight.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is a 50-50 game for me, and you know, when you look at the result, you think I was a fool for picking the Broncos, but I didn't think that there was going to be this much of a difference between the two sides. Like this really should have been a close battle, but they just, that's me. St. George has come in and they just blew them out of the water. And that was partly to do with the mistakes that the Broncos were making.
The next game I did change unsuccessfully. I changed it on the 11th hour and changed it to the Panthers to beat the Tigers. Oh. But then on literally the 11th hour, I just went, oh no, I got to do it. And it wasn't to be. I should have stuck with my instincts and the Tigers beat the Panthers. 26-6 at Leichhardt Oval. Just sort of stuck to my instincts.
Yeah. The thing is, there's not much to say.
No, this was always going to be one of those games, Penrith as vulnerable as what they'll get throughout this sort of origin period
and everything, and you can just tell that they looked very forceful, that there was no patience for them in attack, and as the game went on, they started to get really frustrated. Like Matt Burton probably was one of their he's been in pretty good form this year as one of their better players. Yeah. When you put Tyrone May at halfback, I think you're always going to have trouble putting points on.
He wasn't bad, but you're right.
No, absolutely not. Trouble putting points on. Yeah, it just comes down to the creativity standpoint, and you had to go through a little bit more Matt Burton, and Burton hasn't had that much work in the halves this whole season. So, to throw him in there for the rest of the season, this is the best time to throw him in there and go, there you go, score us some points, will you? Be good.
Yeah.
I think it's just a tall ask and it's just the way that Dane Laurie again, we've talked about Dane Laurie all season, has been a beacon of light for the West Tigers this year, and he looked dangerous every time he touched the ball.
Yeah, so it was spread across for the Tigers. What I liked about the Tigers is that not, yes, Dan Laurie's stood out, but so did Alex Twile stand out. Like, there was a few that just looked like, I guess sort of stood out. Like, there was a few line break assists from Luke Brooks even, you know, and like there was a spread across the team, which was pretty good for the Tigers, anyway.
Even Jacob Little, like, how good was his... Yeah. What, 80-minute effort? He's quick for a dummy half. He's almost like a Damian Cook.
Yeah. Yeah, he is almost like a Damian Cook. Sorry, you are right there. The Panthers, is this going to happen?
Ill discipline all around for both teams, I think.
Both teams, yeah.
I think the Tigers tried to gift early possession and things like that to Penrith with just poor penalties and things like that. And it just come down to your halves combination not being able to threaten the Tigers goal line a whole lot.
The other thing I just think with Penrith, do you think this will, I mean, they'll learn obviously, but this will be something that, like, I mean, they've got two more Origin games and most likely those same five or six players are going to be out for both Origins. So
they played this one now. I guess we'd have to sort of go through the draw and see if they're backing up after Origin again or if they're getting a bye before Origin. Next week they've got the Sharkies. The week after they've got the Roosters, as I guess they go into the next Origin.
What's interesting, what's interesting with the Sharkies is then obviously all the six players have been named all on the bench, all the Origin stars. I love seeing that. They'll all go out there with different numbers. It's just, I love how they do that. That's cool.
I guess it'll all be a wait and see to who's healthy and who's not as it comes to, you know, after Origin and because that game is on Friday night, so they don't have a lot of recovery time, and you'll hear a lot by, you know, like former Origin players and stuff like that, where they'll say the best time to play is the Friday night, because sort of like, you know, that sort of onset of fatigue and you know, and pain from that game hasn't really sort of begun to set in. Like you're still okay, even though you'll still be sore, but you'll hear a lot of Origin players say that playing Saturday, playing Sunday after an Origin is not ideal, because they began to wind down, and then you've got to get yourself back up again, and you know, everything starts to get a bit sore as the week goes on, and you're like, oh, you know, now I've got to play on a Sunday. So I think Penrith might have a little bit of an advantage to be playing on the Friday night, but it'll just be who comes out best after Origin, and how well they're feeling. If they feel like they can rest a few players and still knock the Sharks off, then I guess Cleary will have to go that way.
What's interesting is game two, just before we move on, for the Origin is it's forecasted on the Sunday, the 27th of June, in Brisbane. Did you read that?
That will be after
the Roosters and the Panthers.
16.
No, that'll be but the people rested before that. It's interesting they're having the game on
Sunday.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, sorry, because that'll be the international weekend. So they'll have. I'm pretty sure I'd have to have a look and see.
What's interesting is firstly that game's on a Sunday, so it quite possibly all these teams will be full strength. That's why there's no buys, because that week they've got the Roosters 1v5. So that's a Channel 9 game. So surely that's going to be. No one's going to be out for that game purely because it's Channel 9, and it's a, you know, that's, that'd be like, you know, 10 to 15, 20 players out. So,
yeah, no, I know that, but that's just the risk.
It's a Sunday, but so they might be able to back up.
Being possibly. Sunday. Yeah. So. But that's the thing. That's the risk that they run with things like that. So it's just, it is what it is. Like, you're always going to, this is the price of success.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And they can try and doctor the draw all they like, but it never works out that way. Something will always, you know, an injury or, do you know what I mean? A conflicting schedule will always throw a spanner in the works. Always will.
That's right. Next game was the Storm overcoming the Titans 20-14.
This, I guess, was a game that the Gold Coast, I think, let slip away.
Yeah. No, that's a fair assumption. I would agree with that. They just
Gold Coast had a mountain, especially in the second half, had an absolute mountain of possession to try and nick this game away from Melbourne. And Melbourne, you know, held their line fairly well. Like, they had 10 more sets of six than what Melbourne did.
Melbourne themselves end up getting off to a really good a really good start in the first half. So.
It started off with the second tackle where Jared Wallace is stripped of the ball on the second play.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It was just so lackluster with the ball, and Brandon Smith just goes boink and just pinches it off him, and this is what this game's going to be. Great. Like, you know, the line on this game was 28.5.
Really?
28.5.
Even with all the Origin players out, that's interesting.
Yep.
Wow.
I thought that was way too much.
Yeah, I totally agree with that's way too much. That's very interesting. Because, I mean, look, Melbourne did what they did, and they did it enough. I mean, that was technically their home game up at Sunshine Coast, Sunshine Coast. But I would definitely say that line just, that bewilders me. That's just throwing me. That was that much.
Yeah, that was really out there. I'm like, okay. I honestly don't think that it's going to be that bad. But the way that Melbourne's played this year, especially without a lot of their big guns for the past 4 weeks or so, they haven't had Harry Grant. They haven't had Munster. They haven't had Pappenhausen. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, and all they've done is just lost Kafusi and Addo Carr. So, do you know what I mean? Like, it's a testament to how well that they've been going without those big names, yeah. And for them to put in like they did to hold the Gold Coast out. And look, the Gold Coast weren't awful, like they have been in patches this year. Like they repelled the Storm in that first 15 minutes, I thought, fairly well on their own goal line, especially with the mistakes that they made early, and they repelled the Storm, and I thought that just sort of showed a little bit, because they've leaked points like a sieve this year. You know, they've showed no resolve on their try line. They've made, you know, teams scoring points look extremely easy, and look, they made it very difficult for the Storm to crack their line.
And look, I mean, the Storm, they just stuck to their guns, and then they got, I mean, they was really, there was a pretty of a lackluster second half by, I guess, both sides, really, at the end of the day. Up until, I mean, after that, I don't know, it just felt, Gold Coast were always sort of in it, but it's just, I mean, Melbourne just did enough to sort of win this game, or at least stay into this game. And they could have, like...
They kept them at arm's length, and, yeah. You know, when you're a side that hasn't got a whole lot of confidence, then, that's the classy side that Melbourne is, you can generally get away with these types of games. Look, the Gold Coast forced plenty of dropouts, but could not get over the line. Like, they couldn't capitalize, especially when Rima Smith got sent off, or, you know, got pinned.
That was, as I was going to ask about that, so that dangerous tackle in the 65th minute, that was fair, do you think?
No, absolutely not.
It was fair for a report. I'll give it the report.
Fair for a report, absolutely. But Jolliffe is almost horizontal as he's spinning out of the tackle, and Remus just comes in to try and finish him off. And once again, it's an accident. And yes, he's hit him hard from behind, but that's through no fault of Smith, and that's through no fault of Jolliffe. It's just one of those things. Accidents happen, and for him to get binned, you put him on report and you let him go and answer his case at the judiciary. But for him to get binned, the Gold Coast just could not capitalize on it.
No, they couldn't. And I just think the reason they couldn't capitalize on it was, I just don't know if they've got enough glaring attack anymore. And that's not a knock on them. I just don't know if they've got enough glaring attack. I don't know if they need... You know, like, do they need, like, you know, the Sean Johnsons of the world or someone like that there, since they are going to have that money?
There's a possibility, because if Ash Taylor's out the door there, or if he doesn't get a restructure of his contract to stay there. And look, I thought he was one of their better attacking weapons. Like, his short passing game and short kicking game was terrific. He forced a few of those dropouts. His long passing ability were left much to be desired, you know, trying to throw cutout balls to nobody and things like that. And talk about, you know, just throwing cutout balls and throwing. Can Brian Kelly, like, good God, just, it's the simplest thing in rugby league. It's a two-on-one, draw and pass. You draw Nico Hines in, you pass it out to Philip Sammy. Sammy goes over. Mm-hmm. He had the opportunity, because the fullback was beat, to go around and put the ball underneath the sticks to make it 20-18 and possibly 20-all, and you give yourself every opportunity to win this game. No, he decides to be a ball hog, gets too close to Nico Hines, then tries to go over the top of him. Nico Hines is no pushover, and he drops the ball over the line. It was brutal to watch.
Yeah, they'd thrown
a golden opportunity away like that to draw as close as what they could to pulling that game out of the hat.
Yeah, it was. It just, for me, I was trying to sort of rack my brain. I think we overestimated, you know, that just because they end up picking some great forwards up and all that, we overestimated probably because how they finished last year, how Gold Coast would be in the top eight. We're easily saying the top eight, and this doesn't look like it's going to happen this year. And it's possible because of that, the halves pairing. It just sort of clicked on me in this game.
No, that's, I mean, this game was a little bit like that. I still think they look a lot more dangerous in attack with Ash Taylor there. And like I said, you know, I guess it is a bit of a knock on Tanner Boyd that he just doesn't look like he's up for first grade at the moment. Where I think Ash Taylor, if and when he ever gets back to a decent amount of form, where he can look dangerous in the halves, and you have Jamal Fogarty there as more of a calming half, knows how the game's played, knows where to put the ball into pockets, put the ball into touch, try and find the grass away from the fullback and be that calming sort of halfback, and let Ash Taylor be more of a creator. Whether or not Ash Taylor can get back to that playing for the Gold Coast, or whether he has to be moved on to somewhere else, just the way that, well, I just think that they're a better side if they could get Taylor a little bit healthier, and for him to not be as missing as much football, and for him to be able to click with Jamal Fogarty. I think that for me, they're missing a constant number nine. Like Mitch Rain has sort of been in and out of form throughout this year, and then they're putting Aaron Clark in there as well. I think that's a big part of their game that they need a little bit more continuity with as well, is who they're going to stick with at the dummy half position there.
True. I mean, they didn't know. It felt like right up until we were talking about it, they might get Cameron Smith.
And nothing against, you know, what Smith has done. He's done the best for what he thought. I think sort of keeping everybody in the dark just gave the Gold Coast that little glimmer of hope that, oh, hey, you know, he may come and play for us this year, and we don't really have to address.
But that doesn't help.
Yeah, you know, the fact that do you know what I mean? Like, and Mitch Rain has proven that he's absolutely he's a first grade dummy half, but it's a fair drop off, you know, between the, you know, Cameron Smith and Mitch Rain. So I think that sort of stunted the Gold Coast a little bit throughout this off season, that there may have just been. They may have had a glimmer of hope to try to maybe get him, because he was there, he was seen there with his kids and stuff like that, and running around in parks and things like that. So I thought that sort of that may have stunted them a little bit this year, but it is what it is now. We're in week 13, so you've got to get over that, and you've just got to charge on, and that'll be a large need that they need to address going forward.
The last game that was played was a Sunday. To me, this is, before I sort of say the scoreline, you know how we say Townsville's like purely, you know, suits Saturday night footy up there? When I just lived in Newcastle, it really is like a Sunday Arvo footy game in Newcastle. There's nothing better. Better than night games. Although, putting that in perspective.
Packed house, though.
Sorry?
A packed house.
That's right. No, that's what I'm saying. The Sunday Arvo games are just, that's Newcastle. It's what everyone wants to do. They'll do that before, you know, because it's, your finish is at a decent time. You go have some takeout or something, and then you got work the next day. It's so good to watch footy there. Not for the people that went to this game. They lost 40.
No, definitely not for the people who went to this game. And I guess, like, you know, you know better than most. Like you said, you know, usually Old Boys Day is meant for the last home game of the season. They're in Newcastle. I guess they've sort of brought it forward because this was, you know, the 20 years since the 2001 Grand Final that Newcastle won. That I actually attended that game, which was like the best game of football that I'd ever seen in my life up until that point in time. But this was a far cry from anything like that. Or, you know, you see all the old boys that were there. You see Billy Peden and Joey was there, and then Robbie O and Mark Hughes and Matt Gidley. They were littered with internationals in that side. Good God.
The only good thing that happened, really, it looked like in this game for the Newcastle Knights was Matty John's son, Jack John's, another one of his sons, having a start, you know, obviously, then Matty, you know, obviously the whole 2001 sort of grand final tying in, but that's it. I mean, he went straight in there. I don't know if that was a great move putting Jack Clifford straight in there. His kicking game was brilliant. That glaringly helped them. That was
It also, you know, the ball that he put out on the full by about 20 meters in the second half wasn't one of his best kicks. But the thing is with them too, like now that they've got Clifford there, like they had a bit of a reshuffle and they put Mann back, they put Kurt Mann back into the halves and it was a bit of an unnecessary shuffle around. Like the very first try that Madison scored, you know, in the, whatever it was, third, fourth minute. You could see the Kurt Mann was caught ball watching, and Reed Marnie just gave him a big, dirty, big dummy out of dummy half to the left. And Kurt Mann was just watching the player. And he just sort of looked over, and all of a sudden, Reed Marnie has gone out of dummy half and then just gave the easiest pass to Madison to go over through a gap. And you're like, oh my God, like this could be an extremely ugly afternoon for Newcastle. From there, it just got worse.
And you mentioned his name, Reed Marnie, again, proved that he should have been in that Queensland side or not dropped straight away. Like, it just proved that, you know, you could share Harry Grant and him. Like, I mean, we'll talk about that in a little bit, you know, we'll go over a preview, but goddamn. He was good in this game. Clint Gutherson, he's probably
Gutherson
not going to
was great. Sivo was an absolute steamroller over Stafford Toa. Oh, my God. Like, Stafford, he would have been looking up going, not again. And he just – those two tries just within 6 minutes that he scored.
Oh, my God.
He would just imagine. Been like, oh, God, shoot me now. Shoot me now.
That guy running at you, it would send shivers down your spine.
You would just look up and go, oh, crap. Like, here he comes again. And especially if it's one-on-one.
This guy's a winger. That's what I'd be saying. What the hell?
And the problem is, too, like, you know, and this is all stems back to, you know, the accidental shots to the head and things like that. You've got no choice but to try and go high on Mike Sivo, because if he doesn't – if you go low on him, then – His legs are like tree trunks. He's most likely going to break the tackle. He's got a big upper body, but you've got no choice but to try and go high to at least limit him, because the offload is such a weapon nowadays that if you just go low on people, they just get the offload. And second phase play in the play and the offload is such a massive weapon in today's game. So if you just go around the hips or around the legs and tackles like that, they're ineffective. Do you know what I mean? You got no choice but to go to the upper body on someone like Mike Sivo, and even that is an effort in futility. Like, you got no chance.
Yeah, no, you don't. You're right. You have no chance. And that was it. Like, there wasn't much in this game just of how poor Newcastle played on Old Boys game. I mean, Old Boys Day, I should say.
They were their own worst enemy, Newcastle. Yeah. Their own worst enemy.
Yep. Yeah, they certainly, they certainly were.
65% completion rate. Like, you just, when you're giving away such cheap ball, and especially to when you're not defending that well, especially to a side like Parramatta, who's going to have their tail in the air a little bit after, you know, a couple of disappointing performances over the last couple of weeks, you give yourself no chance to win the game at all.
I just hope that, I mean, it's going to happen for the rest of the year, unfortunately. I think Newcastle's on a slide just because of too many injuries and everything like that. I just hope it doesn't wreck Jay Clifford's confidence for the rest of the year going into next year.
Nah, look, I don't think so. Like, with a bit of luck, you know, I'm hearing that Mitchell Pearce will be back sooner rather than later. They're looking at him maybe being back after the Origin period I guess everybody's forgotten about him. And don't forget, too, like, you know, in this game for Newcastle, they were missing both their starting props. You know, no David Clemmer and no, obviously, no Daniel Saifidi for, you know, for Origin. So they were seriously outgunned up front.
No, and that's right. And they, but that's going to, I mean, that's just the brilliance of their forward pack. We've said that all year. Heard a sneaky Mitchell Pearce possibly going to Canberra out of the blue. I didn't realize his contract.
Yeah, look, I have heard that as well, and it's just anything to do with Canberra at the moment, I'm not really buying, because I think there's a lot of desperation that they're sort of clutching at straws on whether or not to sort of throw this season away or try and scratch and claw their way into the eight and you know, to make it not so you know, not such a lost season, but it's beginning to get that way.
Well, let's move on to them, because that was a final game. I wanted to talk about, I mean, there's a lot to talk about Canberra. I mean, starting with the Curtis Scott. I mean, this is his second indiscretion, is probably the best way to put it. Yeah. He had that Australia Day one where he got tasered and whatever happened from there. But look, I mean, this one, I hate to say it at all, but it clearly looks like he's hit someone going off the CCT footage. So obviously this is all the legend. You can't really tell who it's him, but would have been a patron there. He looks like obviously he's hit a patron himself at a Canberra nightclub. If it is him, and this is his second indiscretion, the guy clearly has a drinking problem. I mean, isn't that just pretty black and white? It's terrible to be black and white about, but I think he does.
That's the thing. Like, you know, it's, I guess these days now, and you don't want to be, you know, the old man get off my lawn sort of type thing. But this is what a lot of athletes, especially this century from 2000s on, is it's all about. Yeah, you know, we have to have proper recovery. It's you know, what are you having after the game? Are you having a protein shake? Are you having, you know, copious amounts of Powerade and water and things like that? It's about looking after your body and about recovering well and moving on to the next week. Whereas past generations of football player, it's we'll sit in the dressing room and have a couple of beers afterwards. And you know, I think alcohol tolerance for a lot of these athletes has totally gone out the window, because it's, and once again, you don't like to use the word binge drinking culture, but that's what it is. It's not about, you know, having it in moderation and we'll have a couple of beers after training, or we'll have a couple of beers or a couple of drinks after a game. It's let's go out and get absolutely shit faced and have however many it takes, you know, after a game or anything. I'm sure that would have happened back in the day as well. Don't get me wrong. That would have absolutely happened back in the day.
Of course it would have.
If you don't have, if you don't build up your little bit of tolerance to it, then some people act like Fruit Loops when they're on the piss. Like it's just a fact of life. And it just seems to be happening a lot more now, because there is that focus on, you know, post-game recovery and things like that. Whereas if they and it's not for everybody. But if you have a little bit of, you know, alcohol tolerance that you build up over the year and things like that, and you don't drink as often as what you maybe should, then when you do go out for a big night, you act like a muppet.
Yeah, that's it. And that by the looks of it, it's all
there. It seems to happen more often than not these days.
And, you know, what's interesting about Curtis Scott is, and this is not a glowing... Well, this is not a glowing trend. Well, it is a glowing trend, I should say. But he moved from Melbourne Storm to Curtis Scott the Canberra Raiders on a decent sort of contract. It's funny when certain players leave Melbourne, Melbourne just have that system where I guarantee, yes, it's out of the spotlight from Sydney, and I get that. And Canberra's technically not in the spotlight either, but they have this system of this kind of stuff.
They're far enough
this kind
to
of stuff
be
would have been. Well, this kind of stuff wouldn't have been tolerated at Melbourne. I don't know if they sort of seen some writing on the wall or something. To have two in the, I mean, he stood down. I don't see him being recontracted. I mean, I think I honestly think he'd be gone. He's only 23.
No, and that's the thing. It's not to say that there can't be any sort of rehabilitation for him or anything like that, but when you get tossed to the curb by a squad like Melbourne, you have to question that. When he goes to another club and I guess you've sort of got another disciplinary or two disciplinary actions and you've got somebody who's a little bit hard-nosed and a little bit old school like Ricky Stewart there, and whether or not he's he's responding poorly to the way that he's being coached, or does that sort of thing come into it or not? You know, Ricky Stewart's an old school kind of guy, so it's you just have to think that is he the kind of guy that needs to be babied along, or can he handle a little bit of hard nosed, hard edge coaching? And or does he need extreme discipline where it's
possibly
you have to, that's right, that you have to be here at this time. This is what you do at this time, and this is how you do it. And whether or not he responds, whether if he's non responsive to that,
if he ends up getting stood down, or he is stood down, but
down at the moment, but whether or not he gets recalled, I guess.
If he ends up getting the chop altogether, I mean, I know we mentioned him before, Matt Dufty, but everything I keep reading is Canberra Raiders are there's three teams and they're by far and away the favourites to sign Matt Dufty and pushing Nicol Klokstad, who is a bit injury prone at the moment, pushing him to the centres if Curtis Scott obviously then gets a chop. So the other two teams are Broncos and Bulldogs, which. Broncos, yes, I totally get. Bulldogs, it's funny that they're going after a number one, but wasn't that the whole point of signing a number one in, I've already lost, Addo Carr?
Well, I guess that maybe, did they want to try and have the experiment of putting Addo Carr at the fullback? But, they've got Corey Allen there who's hurt at the moment. They've tried him at fullback. Hopewadi is not the answer at fullback. So they're sort of chopping and changing a little bit, I think, too much as well. Trent Barrett knew what he was getting into when he took that job, but I think that there's a little bit too much sort of reactionary, the picking of players, the way that I get. Well, that's just the way that the bottom sides work. Like, you can't just keep picking and sticking with the same players and still playing the same awful type of football. Like you've got no choice but to try and bring in younger players and different players to try and pick your side up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What other news did you have before we sort of go over? Well, I got a little bit of a preview of tomorrow's game, but
look, I thought it was, and as much as I don't like taking Brayton Astor's word to the bank, but I thought he did bring up a very good point on Saturday night. About the referees basically putting the 10 minutes in the bin to the side a little bit. Only three sin binnings this week. Granted, there's only four games, but I guess if you just want to be, extremely crude with the way that you want to do statistics, then you could say that would equate to six sin binnings if there was going to be all eight games. But I just thought it was extremely coincidental that they're putting the sin bin away a little bit this round as we lead into Origin 1 up here at Queensland Country Bank Stadium that yours truly will be attending. excuse me. Sorry about that. I just had something.
Yeah, you don't think of everybody that lives that's south. That's okay. But that's cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, yeah, not at all. Anyway, we can we can talk about that soon. But I just thought it was extreme. I just thought it was extremely coincidental that the referees are sort of putting that in their pocket, so to speak, the week before State of Origin. So I guess that leads into a bit of a precedence of what are they going to or how they're going to officiate State of Origin this coming Wednesday. I honestly don't know what the answer is to that. And like we discussed before we come on here about the supposed or non-supposed gentleman's agreement between both sides,
happening.
We all know, like, give me a break. As if there's going to be a gentleman's agreement between Queensland and New South Wales, really?
Yeah, and of course there would. No, there isn't. I can see why he's saying it, but then I could I this is Daly Cherry Evans. He always has that like look on his face that you don't know if he's like if he's playing poker and he's like he's got a bluff on him, because that's what it sort of felt like. Like as yeah, cool, there'll be a gentleman's agreement, and then
but have we heard anything from the New South Wales camp about that? No.
No, that's exactly right. No one's come out and said that. That's all right. So, I think I heard it last week on 360, and you watched it yesterday, so it's probably brought up again. But this is Paul Kent saying, you can't, if you're going to do an NRL, you can't just get leading and see in the origin. If you're going to have these.
Of course not.
You want to do it, this is how you want to ref the game, and this is how, you know, going forward, get away from head injuries, then you've got to do it in this game. There should be no leniency because, you know, these are technically your 34 best players. Well, these are technically your 34 best players in the game. Let's say, so to speak. Let's say they're your 34 best players, which they probably are.
I guess so. But what I'm saying is
you don't want any of these guys having head injuries and all that and being injured because of getting smashed like that. It's not like that, but what I'm making the point is you've got it. You can't just pick one and then say, no, we're not going to do it for that one. I think it's going to be ref the same as the way it's been
ref. The intensity and the speed of origin is just unlike what is in first grade. And they've tried to replicate that in first grade with all the, you know, changing of the rules and the six again and ruck infringements and all that sort of BS. But you just cannot replicate the intensity, and you can't replicate the speed of what Origin is, because like you said, it is 34 of the best players that are running around at the moment. So the game will naturally be better because you've got the best of the best that's in there. So it is what it is. And like they've said, that's why I just thought it was extremely coincidental that they've put the sin bin in the back pocket at the moment. I guess sort of leading into Origin. So I'll be very interested to see how it's officiated on Wednesday night and whether or not that will continue throughout the State of Origin series, and whether or not next week the sin bins will return in full force.
Yeah, well, I think I will say I don't see many sin bins. I think they won't keep the whistle in the pocket. I think they're going to literally blow it, or I believe they should be blowing it. So, we can talk about that game now. Like that, it's going to be obviously a fast paced game. It's going to be nice weather up there. I mean, beautiful winter weather to play up there.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be. Like, yeah, it's going to be magic.
9-10 degrees is even beautiful to watch it. You just had that, you know, a bit of a jumper or a jacket on, and it's nice to watch because it's not so hot stinking there, but it's nice sort of coolness. So
it's been like, yeah, Townsville will absolutely turn it on for, you know, the last few nights up here, probably been, you know, 17, 18 degrees, which is still comfortable for playing rugby league, but yeah, you know, for it to get possibly into single figures on Thursday morning, which means it might be a little bit of a cooler night for up here, especially by North Queensland winter standards, which there really is no winter standards up here. Like winter happens, you know, 3 or 4 days, you know, in 3 months up here. So the possibility of it, you know, being a cooler night will make things a lot more comfortable for the players.
And I know, is your heart saying Queensland, but your head saying New South Wales?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. I thought so. I mean, I'm only going off because we talked about this earlier, and that you mentioned that you're putting the money on New South Wales, so.
Absolutely.
Well, that's pretty easy to answer.
They've set the total points line for this game at 42.5.
Yeah.
Whether or not that changes between now and then, but it generally, unless it's a butt whooping, Origin, especially the first game, is generally very intense, and the scoreline's not that high. So I think that you should be able to get a little bit of value at, you know, taking the under at 42.5, and the Blues are a 4.5 point favorite, so that, you know, they're minus 4.5. So that means you only got to win low. Five. That's what I mean. Low. Like, and that's what I mean. It should this should still be, you know, a fairly hotly contested game. I don't think it's going to be a butt whooping. It should be, you know, a fairly close contested game.
Yeah, you'll know. I mean, look, it's possible. I mean, if you look at our 1-7,
absolutely, it's possible.
Everyone's going on about, like, you know, seeing how Latrell have a breakout against David Gaygai, but I want to look at the other side. I think if Tom gets the edge on Kerb Catewell, which is very, very, very likely, I think everyone's going to blow everybody away in this game, Tom Dvojevic, because he's had a great season.
Well, Catewell's a big body as well, so yeah, it depends on how well he can slide, but he's got to get help as well. Like, it's not just going to be...
Like, exactly right. Like, Gaygai and Mitchell, they'll just, you know, smash each other all game. And it's good to watch, really. But, you know, that's what's going to be our key is Tom and, you know, Tom Dvojevic, if he can get the better of Kerb Catewell. Your side, I think your key is, and I'm sure it's been touted about, is how they're just going to bomb the hell out of Brian Toto, because you've got Xavier, you know, a very tall Xavier Coates out there. So
they're going to have two tall wingers. So you're going to have Coates on one side, you're going to have Cole Feld on the other. So they're going to have an advantage in that regard.
But yeah, Adokar's probably, you know, him and Cole Feld, that you not so much a height difference, but it's Brian Toto and Xavier Coates. Yeah, I think they're going to be peppering Toto, and he's good under the high ball, but they're going to still be peppering.
Absolutely.
They're going to be peppering him all game, I think. So. And that'll be the key, I think.
The thing for me, and I guess we'll sort of discuss it when we do an Origin pod after the game, will be if there was a mistake made by Paul Green in having AJ Brimson as your number 14 in your utility, and not either keeping Reed Marnie, who was, like we said last week, was sent home after one day in the camp, and now... you know, sort of was hurt throughout. He was going to be recalled back into that side. I think there was a little bit of, he's going to be our 18th man, so we'll send him home. He can go back and play for Parramatta so he doesn't get left out and doesn't miss a game. But he ended up partially dislocating his shoulder in that game against Newcastle, which was not the greatest thing to happen. So the standby player now for Queensland is Ben Hunt. And I think it's an absolute mistake to not have Ben Hunt as that number 14/utility player for Queensland. He can cover so many positions. He can cover dummy half. He can cover the halves. Yeah, he's invaluable with the amount of cover that he can provide. That Harry Grant hasn't played a lot of football in the last month. Cameron Munster hasn't played a lot of football in the last month, and they're relying on those guys in, you know, one of the toughest environments in rugby league to get through 80 minutes. And AJ Brimson, as good as he is, he's just unproven at the dummy half/halves role. But he could be an absolute spark out of dummy half. But
he could be. But
Ben Hunt has been there and done it before the bench. Sure.
He's
been there and done it before at dummy half for Queensland. I think it's a massive mistake. That to happen.
It could be 11th hour thing as well, because apparently at the moment AJ Brimson's fine to play, and he'll just want to play because he'll want to play. But I think if you see enough, I'd be pulling him out if he's injured enough and putting Ben Hunt in. It'd be a nice 11th hour move for you guys to do, because you know
I
that
think
happens.
So. And I think so.
I think you need it. Yeah, but if you look at, but I mean, on your other side, if your forward pack, as massive as it is, can get the go ahead, that'll be your key as well. Like, your forward pack is huge. I mean, we have a good forward pack too.
Oh, look, it's huge. But that's when you have a look at the New South Wales bench as well. Like that, they've got a couple of big boppers. That will continue the roll on even when the starters go off.
We've got a very, 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 you know, Jack White and Junior, Paulo Payne, Husley and Martin. That is an extremely good bench. A very, very good bench.
That's right. And they will continue the charge once your starters come off. And that's a scary prospect, that the pressure and, you know, the relentlessness won't subside with, you know, the bench players come on. And that's the point of Origin. That's the point of it.
I guarantee Payne Haas, you know, just I know he's number 10, but I guarantee Payne Haas plays more minutes than Jake Dvojevic. And there's nothing wrong with that. The bench we have is so strong. Dvojevic
will come on and play. We'll play that you know second second row slash lock position. As the game goes on. Payne Haas, we know the motor that he's got.
Tariq Sims is probably the one. I mean, but you got Liam Martin there. So, and you know, Junior Paulo could be moved around. But Tariq Sims was a weird one getting picked straight in the 12. I mean, again, it's probably purely because Victor Radley and missing and Angus Crichton, are out. But yeah, that 14. I mean, Jack White can play anywhere from 1 to 7 too. So that's brilliant. The number is possibly going to be.
And see, that's the thing. That's what you need in that utility role off the bench is the versatility. And I just don't think that AJ Brimson, while he provides good spark off the bench, but he just doesn't provide enough versatility factor. To be versatile enough to be able to put him in there. Like you look at the players past that have been that player off the bench. You know, whether it's been Ben Hunt, whether it's been Michael Morgan, whether it's been Matt Bowen. Like Matt Bowen is a prime example.
Yeah. Ben Hunt 2 years ago.
They provide more than just a one dimensional play, rather than just be we just need a spark off the bench. Like it's about versatility.
I agree. I'll go for New South Wales anyway. I've said to you, I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I'd be very, very surprised if it'll be a blowout.
I mean, you'd hope not because, I guess you don't want any Origins really to be a blowout because that sort of, I guess that takes away a little bit of the spectacle, but it's good sort of water cooler talk for the next day, so to speak. But you don't like to see representative games be butt whoopings, and you sure as hell don't want the referee to decide games in clutch moments. But and that there could be, you know, there's the possibility that the referees could absolutely, you know, decide how this the referees do that anyway, but more so with this crackdown about what's happening at the moment. And you sort of see, I think there's a lot of people that are out there that whether or not they think this is, you know, the way that the NRL has gone about it is the best way to protect the player, you know, with this massive crackdown. It's just an enforcement of the rules. The rules have always been there that you can't hit somebody in the head, but it's just the excessive force that referees and, you know, the NRL has come out and tried to police this, you know, this rule that's always been in place is a little over the top.
That was sort of everything I needed to cover, I guess, for the NRL. The only other thing for me was, and this is just a brief thing, that Tim Sheens has been appointed the head of football performance at the Tigers. What did you think of that move?
I think that's, I guess it's a blast from the past.
I thought about it as well, but the good thing about... you know, we say, blast in the past for Sheens, but Sheens has like played through and won premierships in different eras, in 89 and I think was 2004.
Right.
And yeah, like it wouldn't surprise me how well. Look, I mean, I hate the weird titles, but at the end of the day, I think he's just overseeing everything and making sure the recruitment's right. And then the coach, you know, it's the overseeing over.
No, that's right. It's I guess it's a role that I think that the Broncos kind of wanted for Craig Bellamy. There's a lot of teams that are out there that have that sort of role. You know, like the Panthers had with Phil Gould for a little while, and I guess what he's doing with the Warriors as well. So I guess that sort of role in rugby league is becoming a little bit more sort of prevalent, but. They did talk about this a little bit last night, or, you know, on NRL 360, and that I guess they sort of want to find out what sort of whether it's philosophies or anything of that Tim Sheens can bring into the game, and they want to say, oh, you know, he hasn't coached or been in the NRL for the last, you know, 9 or 10 years. It's like, that's good, but it's not as if that he hasn't been in the game at all. He's been in the Super League. He's been the coach. Yeah. He's done these sorts of roles at, you know, at the first grade level in England. So it's not as if that he hasn't been involved in, right, you know, that he's just had this hiatus from the game. You know, he's still been involved in the game for the last 10 years. So I think this is a shrewd move by the Tigers to get him back involved. And, you know, for him to have that sort of, he's got that legendary status there at the West Tigers, you know, with the grand final win in 2005. So it's just the way it is. They've got to do something there at the West Tigers, and I don't mind the move at all.
No, I think I see it as that Phil Gould sort of role that he had at the Panthers. And then he's moved to the Warriors.
It's team and roster building and talent evaluation.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
And it's a name as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, if he's the guy that's coming out and recruiting you, then you're like, oh, wow, you know, Tim Sheens thinks, you know, I could be a useful part to this team. You know, maybe I will go there. So it's a lot of it, you know, 50-50 is to do with the name as well, I think, rather than
100%.
Whether or not he's a good talent evaluator or not, or, you know, a good, you know, runner of a football team. So I guess it's one of those wait and see type things.
So to finish off, we usually do our studs and duds of the week. May as well just start with the stud of the week for yourself.
Pretty easy, I thought, and Matt Dufty.
Yeah, just I thought. I mean,
involved in it, and he had 5 try assists. You know what I mean? Like, he had 4 line break assists, a line break himself, 2 tries. Just every time that he had the ball, it looked like he was going to carve Brisbane and just chop them to shreds. And he
so
basically
much
did.
So, like, it's interesting that they did a online petition, and they got 50,000 signatures to get him to stay.
Is it 50,000 now? I'd heard 10,000.
No, I heard 50 now.
Wow. Man,
even if it was 10 to 50, that's still a lot of signatures for one player to stay.
If you've got 10,000 signatures, that'd be most club members.
Well, 50,000 would be a huge amount of club members.
That's out of control.
I mean that could be inflated, of course, but yeah, no, it is what. I think he definitely deserves a start. I don't. Defensive frailties aside, if you've got someone like a defensive weapon like that, you can. I mean, it's like you can't coach offense, but you can definitely coach defense. You can't coach speed. You can't coach line breaking. You can't really.
No, that's right. All you can do is point a player in the right direction. And hope that they sort of respond in the way that you want them to, whether it's, you know, coaching wise, whether it's, you know, defensively, offensively. I think that he's got youth on his side, and he can absolutely get better. He can get better with both facets of the game, but you can see that he's very instinctive when he plays offense. So he doesn't really need to do much or add a whole lot to his game. Offensively, but like the people say, or, you know, the people in the know that are the actual journalists in rugby league down in Sydney, that they seem to think that there's some defensive frailties that he has, and I think they can absolutely be worked on.
Your dud of the week? I mean, I thought this was pretty easy too as well for me.
My dud of the week is one Brian Kelly.
It's all just from
one play, just draw and pass on that, and, you know, this was against the 12-man Melbourne squad, and trying to be a ball hog and go yourself and to try and steamroll Nico Hines when you've got Philip Semmy on your left unmarked. There's the possibility that there's no fullback at home. You can run around and put the ball underneath the sticks. And it's 2018 with the possibility of 2020. Like, it was just, it's a ludicrous play that he just like I said, that's a game that the Gold Coast sort of let slip away, but this was a crucial mistake by Brian Kelly that totally would have had the Gold Coast back in the game.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah, look, I can see why you picked it, but for me, it was just the entire, and it's, I think because it was our old boys, just the entire Newcastle Knights. They were just all the players were disappointing, and
they were heartless.
Yeah, and even they just. Actually, when I listened to it, and Mal mentioned it, actually, Mal Meninga, they need to address their poor starts. They seem to concede the first try in nearly every game this year. So, but at least North Queensland, they have come back in games and won games.
They show a little bit of resolve, and that it's either okay, we'll try and outplay you in attack. Like their defense hasn't been the best, but we'll try and outplay you in attack. With Newcastle, there's just nothing there on either side.
No. And it is probably down to their horrible injury toll, but a couple of players out for Origin, but no.
Adam O'Brien was less than impressed with the picking of Kalyn Ponga for Origin this week. Where I think they knew that he had little to no chance of playing. So I think he was sort of a little bit critical about that selection and why he couldn't just stay in Newcastle and continue to rehab his groin injury that he's had that's kept him out the last couple of weeks, which has been good for our boy Tex Hoy, but it's...
He didn't have a good game. Straight up defensive frailties against that first try against Ryan Madison. Yeah. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, Madison's a bit of a unit. Like, you know, Tex
always... Yeah, I know. We'll defend him to the day we die, but...
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. It's, I mean, yeah, oh, yeah, we'll ride him into the grave. But he's not the problem. It's that... Adam O'Brien, they've said out there before that he's a very defensive-minded coach, and not so much that it's sort of showing a little bit, because it isn't, because Newcastle are horrendous defensively, but they're not getting a whole lot of crisp attack out of them as well, and that is to do with the makeshift halves pairings that they keep trying to throw together each week, mm-hmm. And not having, I guess, that classy... sort of half there in Mitchell Pearce. I still think their best halves combination going forward, regardless of whether Clifford's there now, is still Mitchell Pearce at 7 and Connor Watson at 6. I just do.
And Clifford's probably that Connor Watson. No, they still don't know what they want to do with Connor Watson. So.
No, exactly. You know, in the last couple of weeks, he's been playing in the halves. And, you know, this week he was named in the halves and then dumped back to the bench. So it's almost like a Tyrone Peachey-type situation they've got at the Gold Coast, where he doesn't know where he's going to be each week. And I think that plays on the mind a little bit.
Last thing we'll finish on was, and it's a good note and bad note, but I mean, officially Brett Morris has announced his retirement from rugby league after that season-ending ACL injury he had in Newcastle last month. He's finished after 16 seasons in the NRL.
Yeah, look, I guess I think it is a bit of a loss for the game. You know, he's a two-time premiership winner. He won a premiership, you know, early on in his career with the Dragons.
Dragons, yeah.
He won a premiership with the Roosters a couple of years ago. He's played 18 tests, 15 Origins. He's fourth all time on
and
the try scorers list.
If he didn't get this injury, like the way that he started again this year, he would have passed Steve Menzies and pushed Billy Slater's 190. Right. I honestly think he's. I'm not going to say he's the best winger of all time, but I think he's the best finisher of all time. He knows how to find that finishing line.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, he's been through a few teams. Yeah, he's been at the Dragons. He's been at the Bulldogs. Yeah. You know, now he's been at the Roosters. He's a bit of a journeyman. And like you said, one of the best finishers. And I think you can put him in that. You know, he's one of the best wingers that the game has ever seen. On his finishing ability. You know, he's at 272 first grade games. and having 176 tries, you know, that's a pretty damn good strike rate over that long. Like, to me, it's the near impossible record to break in Ken Irvine's 212 tries. And the scary thing about that is 212 tries in 240 first grade games.
220.
Which is an unbelievable strike rate.
He's got 220 tries, Ken Irvine.
I thought it was 212.
No, he's got 220. No one's catching Ken Irvine. I'm 100% sure he's got 220.
I beg to differ. I think it's 212, but anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sure you're looking it up right now. But obviously one of the best wingers of all time. I definitely think he's the best Morris out of the two. I just thought I'd like to touch on that he's better than Josh Morris personally.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing too. Like,
I'm not saying
John
Morris is a bad player. I'm just saying that Brett Morris is a better player. It's simple.
All right, so 212, but it's not 240 games. It's 236. So that's even better.
They're 212 because everything I've read. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Looking at it right here, 212 out of 236 first grade games.
I mean, you could really go right back and go all the way past to his first class games, which he played 432 and scored 385 tries.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
That's unbelievable.
So he played 31 tests for Australia, scored 33 tries.
Yeah.
Scored better one per game. But anyway, we're sort of glossing over what Brett Morris has done. And, you know, and Josh Morris is I guess he's a not so much a victim of Brett Morris's success, but Josh Morris has always played in the centers. So
yeah, that's exactly right.
It's just the especially when they play together as well, you know, they're always, I think, what's Josh Morris got, 156 or something like that. So, you know, he's not that far behind him, and I guess he's got a bit of a decision to make as well, whether or not he wants to continue on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The Kenny Irvine thing just blows me away. He's the best winger of all time.
It's the unobtainable record. Like, look how long Billy Slater played, and he got 22 behind him. So he probably would have had to play two more seasons to get over the top of him. So,
yeah. He's done it. Yeah, wow. Oh my God. Yeah, he's the best winger of all time. I think he was named the greatest Australian winger of all time, to be honest. So, wow. Yeah, no, look, full credit to Brett Morris. You know, great career. Very, 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 very good career. I think he just could, and from what we could see, I just think he is one of the best innings purely because he is on the wing. I just think he knows how to find a line and never slow down. We said that last year.
That's right. And the way that he started off this year, good God.
Yeah. Well, didn't he get like three or four tries in one of those games? They smashed someone at the start of the year. I thought he got four.
I thought he had like two hat tricks already this year.
Yeah. So, well done. Unfortunately, you know, AIDS catches up with you, and then obviously an ACL. You know,
they said straight up that there's the possibility that this could end his career, and I thought that was a little premature to sort of say that after he'd done the ACLs. It's like, man, people come back from ACLs all the time. Okay, he's 34. That's all well and good. I just thought when they sort of said that, it's like, I thought that was a little harsh. To straight up go, oh, that's it, yeah, this could end his career. I thought that was a little bit of sort of sensationalism by, I think it happened in Newcastle, didn't it? I'm pretty sure it happened in Newcastle. So I thought that was, a little bit of sensationalism there by the commentators to say that this could end his career. Like, you know, you don't really want to just come straight out and say that. I thought that was a bit rough, but it's rung true. And it's disappointing the way that he's finished like that, but you know, he's had an unbelievable career. The what he's achieved in the game is just second to none, especially at that position for such a length of time.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That was everything I needed to cover. Sorry. I just got lost in sports bet just then. Whoops. So I'm going to finish off. My name's Jason. Yeah, I'm going to play some bets tonight. Smith?
Yeah, the Gamble Master 5000A. Good grief.
Oh, you've already put him.
Yeah, no, I've already put my bet on for Origin. I'm Miles. I'm going to State of Origin 1 tomorrow night, Plum. Boom!
Yeah, that's okay. And just think about your other podcast, mate. You could have been invited, but that's cool, man.
Hey, look, it's all circumstantial. Very disappointed last week that I couldn't get any tickets, and this was, I think it was just potluck to get these tickets. Like there was 1,800 more that went on sale today. I didn't even get any of those tickets. I got tickets in another stand. So this
a very good stand.
What happened today is just total and utter potluck, and I am not the luckiest person on this planet. So for that to happen is unbelievable to happen. I have the tickets printed out already ready to go. So the city should be abuzz on Wednesday night as we head into town and then sort of stroll across the bridge and head over to the stadium for the game. Like you said, you know, hopefully this it's not, you know, an absolute blowout either way. Although I'll definitely take a Queensland blowout, but I don't see that happening. Yeah, hopefully it's going to be hotly contested and that we put on a show up here. You know, just the Townsville community, you know, the North Queensland community coming out and supporting this game, which the region always does.
Yeah, it will because they'll need to put it on show purely because it. I still think it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, but it's still possible.
Absolutely, this is. There's no way in hell that this will ever come up here again. I don't think. This is a one-off situation.
It's possible. It's still possible,
but there's so many other options now that you know, Townsville's had it. And if this sort of situation ever pops up again, there's always going to be other options and they're not going to continue to come back up here. So, yeah, this is absolutely one of those sort of once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. A lot of people that were out there trying to get tickets haven't got tickets. So it's disappointing that the official capacity now with the extra seating going up is like 27,400. So... it's obviously a sellout. They did well to get the extra seats to come up from down south. They actually looks really good to have those extra seatings up the northern end of the stadium. So it'll be an unbelievable sort of spectacle, and I hope that the game reflects that.
Well, have a good week, everyone, except for you because you're going to the game.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Look, it's going to be a struggle to get to work the next day.
Thursday morning,
but to be honest, I don't really care.
No, I wouldn't either. All right.
See you, everybody. Enjoy State of Origin. Go Queensland. And boo. Yeah, we'll boo yourself. Boo!